Hello, and welcome to More Than a Movie, a show about films and filmmaking here on Campus FM. My name's Andrew Bonello, and along with a guest I'll be welcoming onto the show very shortly, we'll take a journey into the magical world of movies. Today, we'll be fluttering our hearts over impossible love in the movies. And a little later on, I'll be training the spotlight on some films from various genres, each of which shows a love that's impossible for a different reason. Some will be heartbreakers, others will leave you glowing, warmer than a plutonium rod in a Siberian nuclear silo. Not quite sure where that analogy came from. But anyway, before we get to all that, let me begin by introducing our guest for this week. Hiba Shibani is a Libyan journalist, television producer, photographer, and documentary filmmaker. She has held positions at a number of Libyan and international media outlets, including Reuters, Libya TV, Al Asama TV, and Libya's channel. Shibani is also one of the authors of Our Women on the Ground, a book about Arab women reporting from the Arab world. Hiba has been based in Malta for 5 years, and her latest work here also includes a short narrative film called Off Day. Hello, Hiba, and welcome to the show.
Hello, thank you for having me, and thank you for that introduction.
You're very welcome. Great to have you here. So, Hiba, let's start by talking about how your love for film generally was born. Do you remember?
Well, I remember the legend. So, yes, it starts with the legend. According to my parents, it started when I was almost 1 year old, because I spent a lot of time with my grandmother, and she was Egyptian. She had this amazing love for Egyptian old films from the 50s and the 60s. And I grew up around her, and I grew up around that kind of environment of film. And according to my parents, if they put a film on, I'll be the quietest kid they've ever seen.
You were enraptured by these films.
I was just mesmerized by it. Mm. I loved it so much. And I think even today, when it comes to a film from that, especially from the 60s, I would drop everything and sit down and watch it. Doesn't matter how many times I watched it before.
And do you remember the first film you saw in that period of your young life?
I think it was a film called Saghir Ala Al-Hub. It's an Egyptian film, Too Young to Be in Love. That's the literal translation to the title. And it is a hilarious film about, it's a rom-com basically. And okay. It's about, a full-grown woman. She wants to be a singer so badly that she impersonates a child basically. She pretends to be a teenager to go on this talent show. And she falls in love with the director of the talent show, only that he thinks that she's a teenager, she's a child. So he keeps resisting, and it ends up in really weird, hilarious situations. But yeah, I think that was the first movie I actually watched, and I remember.
That stuck in your mind.
Yes. Yeah. The English films, I think it was The Roman Holiday.
Right, we'll talk about that very shortly. But let's stay on your work for a little bit. So your work in film has been more on the documentary side, would that be fair? Or because you've also done some journalistic reporting, as we talked about, but where has your focus been?
Well, early on in my career, like almost 8 years ago, it started on the reporting side because I was a reporter. And then I produced and directed a couple of talk shows and always human interest story that what really piqued my interest. Mm-hmm. But from there, I moved on to short documentaries for the channel that I worked for. And then I went on to full-on documentaries just because there's just so many stories out there, especially in Libya and North Africa, mm-hmm. that I felt needed to be told. And I was fortunate enough that I had supports either from my employers, from my colleague, from the channels I worked for. And even when I worked for Reuters, I had a lot of support from the agency itself.
Fantastic, right. And so more recently, you're also moving into sort of the narrative side and fiction. Do you want to talk about...
That was like a long dream, like a childhood dream of mine.
You always wanted to move in that direction?
I always wanted to move into films. It's just I never understood, because in Libya, we don't exactly have a lot of opening for art, especially not cinema or films. So even just the idea of going to study cinema was not an option. Studying art was not an option. I remember the first time I even understood what the word director meant. It was watching Jurassic Park and I read the name like director Steven Spielberg, and I was like, oh, I'd seen that name a lot. And then I remember like looking up, so like, oh, he basically made everything that has to do with my childhood films.
I see. Yes.
And I was like, I would love to do that. I would love to go and make films that other people would enjoy the way I enjoy them and the way they shaped my childhood and a lot of the way I looked into the world.
Awesome. Yep. Great, great. So tell me about your short film here in Malta that you've been working on.
Oh, yeah, Off Day. So Off Day is a product of me and Cassie Camilleri. She is absolutely a superstar, brilliant writer, and also she produced the film. I directed it, and we had a remarkable cast and crew of mainly women. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of like the big thing. Off Day is a short, I would call it a drama, following a nurse, because we thought that we wanted an unconventional heroine. We want her to be a strong figure, but at the same time, she lives in our world, in our society here in Malta, and she faces what most of the young people here face, which is she finds it hard to get the opportunity to own her own home. She finds it hard, you know, because of the economic situation. She works hard. She works in a field that's very, very much underappreciated, mm-hmm. especially that she cares for the elderly.
Yes.
So that was like something we wanted to focus on. And we thought, like, let's follow her for a day. Which day? It's her off day. Because of her economic situation, she works two jobs. She's a nurse and she also works in a cafe as a waitress, just to get, you know, ends meet. And like the first day off that she gets in like month, she ends up spending it with her favorite patient, because just this is the kind of person she is. She has a big heart and she couldn't handle the fact that her favorite patient is having her birthday all by herself. So she decides, you know what, screw this. Let's try to make her day better. But yeah, that's in a nutshell, that's it. Off Day is following a nurse, trying to enjoy her off day, but the universe conspired against her.
Sounds charming. Fantastic. Okay, so thank you for telling us about that. Our theme today is impossible love in the movies.
Yes, and one of my favorite.
You had a couple of films you wanted to mention to us that you really care about, you really love?
Well, let's start with the Roman Holiday, since we talked about it earlier.
Oh, we can't go running around town with a hot princess.
You want in on this deal, or don't you?
And what a deal it is when the princess starts giving Greg the royal runaround.
So, Roman Holiday, 1953, I believe.
Yes.
What's so special about this film for you?
Let's start with the clip you guys just rolled. It's kind of funny. They don't make trailers like that anymore. I kind of miss it. I don't know, but I kind of miss the narrator. Roman Holiday, I think, is like one of the first Western films that really kind of shaped the way I looked into films in general, especially rom-coms. Because in my mind, that's the first unconventional rom-com that you can possibly watch. It was brilliant. It was hilarious. It was great performance from Audrey Hepburn. And I think it was like her first proper film. Before that, she only did theater. And Gregory Peck, I mean, talk about leading man. Mm-hmm. And at the end, you know, I was like thinking, oh, that is such a brilliant, cute, funny love story that ends up in a very realistic way. Because the storyline is, I'm not burning it to anybody, mm-hmm. so spoiler alert. it's from the 50s, but spoiler alert. So she's a princess, and he's an American journalist, and they both meet in Rome because she was in Rome on some sort of a diplomatic mission. And she is very young, but she kind of got tired of her life of being a royal, trapped sort of thing. And one night she kind of got drugged by mistake and she ran off from her embassy and she ended up on the street and Gregory Peck find her. And it becomes really a bunch of hilarious situation when he's trying to take her back after realizing who she is. He's trying to write his story. But he ended up falling in love with her after just one day, both of them basically in Rome. And to me, in my mind, that's also kind of a postcard to how beautiful Rome at that time, point in time. But at the end, of course, their love story does not work out. It's an impossible love story. She's a royal. He's just an American journalist. And even the ending is so, emotional. It got a little bit of that bittersweet where he ends up within the press to interview her before she leaves.
Wow, sounds charming. I think I'm going to have to add this one to my list.
It's kind of a very nice, light film. And actually, like last week, I introduced it to my kid. She's 7. And I was just rewatching it just for the hell of it. And she's just sitting next to me. It's like, oh, that's really cute, Mommy. And she's used to watching old films with me. We do that almost on a weekly basis. But it was kind of fun to see her see something I loved and I watched so many times for her to watch it for the first time.
So she enjoyed it?
She found it hilarious.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because watching a film from sort of almost 70 years ago, it's quite a different mindset. But your young daughter still could engage with the film.
Yeah. My young daughter, she basically grew up on watching films with me as well.
That's fantastic. Awesome. Okay, well, I think we're out of time for today. So, Herbert, thank you so much for joining us on the show, talking about your work, and we really look forward to hearing more about your activities here in Malta.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
You're very welcome. Now then, what about impossible love movies that were shot here in Malta? Well, romance productions that set up shop on our sunny little archipelago are a little bit thin on the ground. Well, back in 2008, a previous engagement, a Canadian romantic comedy directed by Joan Carr Wiggin, was filmed here. Now, very often, when Malta's used by international productions, it tends to double up for somewhere else. The films are often set in the Middle East or North Africa, but actually shooting here in Malta is easier for various political and cultural reasons. Not so with A Previous Engagement, in which the story actually takes place in Malta. A woman talks her husband into a family vacation on the island, but she actually has a secret agenda, a date made 25 years earlier with her first love. The film got pretty mixed reviews upon release, but I'd say that it qualifies as a locally shot entry in the impossible love in the movies canon, wouldn't you? Then, more recently, in 2015, our islands got very excited by the presence of Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie for the filming of By the Sea.
Are we ever going to talk about it?
Yes, sir.
Do you hate me?
You know my reason.
You want to hurt me?
You're nothing.
Hurt me.
Here, Imjari Shini in Gozo is doubling up for the south of France in the 1960s. Now, Angelina Jolie actually directed this film, as well as starring in it. It got pretty mixed reviews, and apparently was not a box office success, but perhaps worth a look if you enjoy scenic photography, both inside and outside of the bedroom. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge, say no more. Well, now it's time to venture beyond the shores of our hallowed Isles of Malta, as we discover some films which truly highlight impossible love in the movies. And our first film today is Ron Howard's 1984 romantic comedy Splash. A young man is reunited with a mermaid who saved him from drowning as a boy. He falls in love with her, not knowing who or what she is.
I don't understand. All my life, I've been waiting for someone, and when I find her, she's a fish. Nobody said love's perfect.
So, most of our listeners will be very familiar with Tom Hanks, one of the most accomplished cinema actors of our time. But this was one of his very early feature film roles. He was aged just 18 when he starred in this movie. Hard to believe, really. And here he's in full-on comedy mode, playing the straight man alongside his sidekick brother in the story, played by the great John Candy. Now, Candy was a wonderful Canadian comedy actor who sadly died all the way back in 1994, aged just 44 years old. But before his untimely passing, he acted in some of the seminal 80s and 90s American comedies, including Spaceballs, Home Alone, and, of course, 1989's superb Uncle Buck. But in Splash, Candy and Hanks are joined by the lovely Daryl Hannah playing the mermaid and the wacky Eugene Levy, he of American Pie fame, amongst many others. Levy provides superb angry-faced service as a marine biologist with evil intentions towards our seafaring heroine. And, well, a man falling in love with a mermaid? I'd say that classifies as impossible love, right? This is a wonderfully funny, sincere, and moving romance film, and if you're at all interested in comedy translated to the big screen, you simply must check out the wonderful timing and acting by all the central actors here. Splash has themes of hope, finding meaning in an otherwise empty life, and discovering allies in the most unlikely of enemies. And if that doesn't bring a tear to your eye, well then I'll eat my halibut.
I saw stars.
Now, younger viewers may have heard this film mentioned in relation to a recent Oscar-winning genre movie, that being Guillermo del Toro's 2017 fantasy, The Shape of Water. So many commentators have pointed out the similarity of that newer film's overall story arc with that of Splash, depicting as it does a woman, in this case, who develops feelings for a strange amphibious creature being held in captivity. And if we're being totally honest, the final scene of The Shape of Water so closely mirrors the climax of Splash that comparisons will have seemed inevitable. It's not quite shot for shot, but it's not too far off. Well, I have to say I was pretty underwhelmed with The Shape of Water, despite the rapturous critical reception it received the world over. And whilst I think it's very much okay to pay homage to famous films of old by borrowing from or retelling a similar story, I'd argue that Splash is by far the superior movie on almost every count. But what do you think? Have you seen both Splash and The Shape of Water? Did they feel like similar films to you? And which one did you prefer? We'd love to hear from you, so please email us your thoughts at morethanamovieqs@gmail.com. That's morethanamovieqs@gmail.com. Staying now in the realm of New York-based romantic comedies, we move forward 3 years to 1987's Moonstruck. Oh, now if you haven't heard of this one before, boy, are you in for a treat. Loretta Castorini, a bookkeeper from Brooklyn, New York, finds herself in a difficult situation when she falls for the brother of the man she has agreed to marry.
I'm gonna marry him. Do you hear me? Last night never happened, and I'm gonna marry him, and you and I are gonna take this to our coffin.
I can't do that.
Why not?
I'm in love with you.
Snap out of it!
Directed by Norman Jewison, the film stars Cher alongside the now ubiquitous Nicolas Cage in one of his very early roles. Now, I know Nick Cage gets a lot of flack for being a very prolific actor, shall we say. I mean, he literally has over 100 acting credits at this point in his career. And I'll admit, his films haven't always been top-tier classics. But come on, people, let's face it, some of the most famous films of the last 40 years star Nicolas Cage. Wild at Heart, Face Off, Adaptation, the list goes on and on and on. And let's not forget that he won Best Actor in the Oscars for 1996's Mike Figgis drama romance Leaving Las Vegas. But back to Moonstruck. Cage here is absolutely on fire as a maimed beggar. The scene where we first meet a furious Ronnie Camerari as he loads the red-hot oven in his basement bakery, well, it's simply one of the great moments of modern character acting by Nicolas Cage here. It's simply a must-see scene. This is a wonderful, sincere, and genuinely hilarious portrayal of a working-class Italian-American family. Music and opera play a dominant role in the film as it features Puccini's opera La Bohème. It's such a theatrical movie in so many ways, feeling almost like a play. The strongest scenes take part around the family breakfast table. So any budding screenplay writers out there, if you're suffering from dialogue fatigue and the lines you've been writing for your characters are feeling too hackneyed and on the nose, watch Moonstruck and wonder at the beautiful way character, story exposition and comedy are skillfully presented by master actors at work. Now, Cher won Best Actor herself in the Oscars for her role in this film, and there's also really good support by Olympia Dukakis and Danny Aiello. All round, this is just sensational stuff. If you haven't seen it yet, rent Moonstruck for your family and get set for a charming and moving night of laughter. Excellent, heartwarming stuff.
The moon brings the woman to the man, capisci?
Isn't it romantic?
You get a love bite on your neck. Your life's going down the toilet.
You have your eyes open for you, my friend.
I have my eyes open.
I'll say no more.
You haven't said anything.
Well, so at that, it's on to our next impossible love film, The Human Stain, directed by Robert Benton in 2003. Now here we change tack very markedly away from comedy and more into serious drama. Anthony Hopkins plays Coleman Silk, a classics professor at a prestigious New England college whose career is destroyed when he's accused of using a racial slur in one of his lectures. The downward spiral of his life spawns a new friendship alongside an intriguing new romance that may lead him down a very dangerous path.
Thanks for the lift. Wanna come in?
Hmm? You mean now?
Mm-hmm.
I haven't been this close to a woman for...
Since your wife died. Oh, no.
Adapted from a book of the same name by Philip Roth, there's a really strong cast here, with Nicole Kidman as the female lead. Also appearing are Gary Sinise and Ed Harris, who gives a chillingly intense performance in this movie. This is a serious film which has an elaborate chronological structure, including several flashbacks to the professor's early life as a student. But the central pillar of the story, really, is the rather poignant romance that develops between the aged widower played by Hopkins and the much younger and very troubled woman that Kidman portrays. There are the kind of scenes here that feel so natural, feel so well observed, that really, we know we're watching great actors at work. Not a film I'd want to spoil by giving away too much in the way of plot details. I recommend this movie to anyone who's looking for a more serious and meditative romantic drama.
Have you any idea what you're getting into here, Coleman? She's not from your world. Give her up and your troubles go away.
For our final film today, we fly across the pond to France for the 2008 Fred Cavaillé film Pour Elle, which translates into English as Anything for Her. A French couple raising a young boy see their life turned upside down when the wife is suddenly arrested, accused of murder, and sentenced to a very long prison term. Now, film buffs and film students who are listening are probably well aware of the global influence of French cinema, with its new wave directors such as Jean-Luc Godard and François Truffaut in the late 50s and 60s. Now, I'll admit, I'm not too familiar with the filmographies of these great French auteurs. My knowledge runs mainly to more recent French movies, probably since the 80s and 90s, and more recently. But I'm here to tell you, French cinema is very much alive and kicking today, mesdames et messieurs. And here in Pour Elle, we have a rather wonderful example, a crime thriller, no less. It's a neo-noir, really. Note that this is Fred Cavaillé's feature film directorial debut, and what a movie he has helmed here. The film stars veteran French actor Vincent Lindon, alongside the superbly versatile and multilingual Diane Kruger, who many of you will recognize from Quentin Tarantino's famous war film Inglourious Basterds. And the two leads are complemented by a slew of experienced actors from French cinema and television. Once again here, I'm going to stay light on plot details for Pour Elle. Suffice it to say that the opening act of this film masterfully weaves a tale of deep love thrown into peril, forming a very powerful emotional foundation for an apparently by-the-numbers genre movie. What's striking really about this film is how, though it's essentially a thriller, the story, acting, visuals and music, they all combine to create a very pervasive feeling of sadness and melancholy for most of the runtime. The scenes between Lindon and Diane Kruger are so tender and moving, so, so sad really. This is just terrifically good genre drama. Now, the morality of this tale moves into rather more challenging and murky territory as things progress. This is a deeply moving thriller which brilliantly subverts the genre, almost entirely avoiding cliché. Indeed, the director makes truly meaningful moments out of the kind of formulaic scene that we tend to see listlessly getting repeated in countless other movies in this subgenre. There's also an absolutely towering musical soundtrack. Curiously, this film spawned a remake by Hollywood, that being the 2010 Paul Haggis film The Next 3 Days, starring Russell Crowe and Elizabeth Banks. Note that Fred Cavaillé, the director of the original film, actually has a writing credit on this remake. Now, you may feel that Hollywood remakes are almost always inferior to the originals, and I'd have to say that that is probably true in this case. But the fact that the French film did get remade is a pretty strong vote in favour of the original, right? So, if you feel like a good thriller, and you're a little bit sick of the standard Hollywood fare, then Pour Elle comes highly recommended. Really, if you only choose to look up one of the films mentioned today, please make it this one. You won't regret it. So, What did you think of the movie selection in our show today? Did we make you think of some worthy, impossible love in the movies classics? Did our suggestions today convince you to seek out and watch one of the films that's been mentioned? If so, we'd love to know what you thought of it. For all that and any other feedback, suggestions or questions, please email us at morethanamovieqs@gmail.com. That's morethanamovieqs, all one word, @gmail.com. This More Than a Movie episode, Impossible Love in the Movies, was written and presented by Andrew Bonello. A big thanks to our guest, Hiba Shibani, today, and also, of course, to our illustrious sound designer, Redant Abdillah. The intro music was Creepy Comedy, and the outro is Inspiring Teaser, both by Raphael Crux at filmmusic.io, and the clips are licensed under creativecommons.org, version 4. Thank you so much for listening, and I do hope you'll join us again next week on More Than a Movie, where we'll be focusing on psychological thrillers that explore identity.